Hi, this is Chris Kepler with Does This Happen to You? The podcast where we explore the more bizarre ways of getting through your day. This week, we have two stories from two of my favorite bloggers, and we start out with How to Avoid Dating from The Return of the Modern Philosopher, a blog on WordPress. It's another dating tips post, Modern Philosophers, but this one is going to have a completely different spin. Rather than advising you on how to improve your dating experience, I'm going to offer advice on how to avoid dating altogether. I'm doing this at the request of several readers who made me aware that I was ignoring the needs of a certain portion of the modern philosopher population. Thank you to everyone who wrote in and asked me to expand my column so that everyone could take advantage of my sage dating advice. For those of you who are addicted to dating or simply can't stand being alone, here's some advice on how to break the dating cycle and finally feel comfortable just spending some time on your own. Binge watch a show or binge read an author. Keep your mind occupied and your thoughts won't drift down the path that leads to your feeling like you need to go on a date. Go on a different sort of adventure that I guarantee will not lead to heartbreak, bodily harm, blows to the psyche, or the kind of nightmares that make you want to sleep with the lights on and a bat next to the bed. I love discovering a new author and then getting lost in a series of books. I'm told some TV shows are like that too, for those of you not looking to challenge your brain with too much reading. You can close a book or pause a TV show anytime, and they're never going to stand you up or refuse to return your calls. Focus on self-love. Get your minds out of the gutter, modern philosophers. I wasn't referring to that kind of self-love. What I'm advising is to stop worrying about finding someone to love because you already know the perfect person to be the object of your warm and fuzzy feelings. You. You should always be your top priority. Be happy in your own skin. Spoil yourself. Learn to be comfortable being alone. Once you are happy with you, then you can turn your love outward to someone who is going to be incredibly lucky to receive it. Despite what the world might lead you to believe, you don't need a significant other to be normal. It's okay to be single. Take up a hobby. If you are a serial dater and want to break the addiction, you need to find a distraction. If there's something else to fill your time and consume your thoughts, then there won't be any time or brain cells left to dedicate to the thought of dating. Plus, if you come up with a really nerdy hobby that you talk about all the time, regardless if anyone else wants to hear about it, you will exponentially decrease your chances of finding someone willing to go out with you. You can always take up running. If you do it right, you will improve your health and your self-confidence, so you won't be worried about dating. If you do it wrong, you'll be too badly injured to go on a date. Hang out with your friends who are in a relationship. All friends who are coupled up fall into two categories, the ones who are annoyingly madly in love and the ones who can't stop bickering and prefer doing it in front of an audience. The out-of-control lovebirds will make you sick to your stomach and remind you that you never want to act that way in front of your friends. The fighters will make you uncomfortable because they will demand that you take sides, and you know you can't do that, but they won't stop hounding you until you do. Oh my God, they are driving you crazy already, aren't they? Let yourself go. If you can't fight off the urge to date, then you need to make it impossible for anyone to want to date you. Stop working out. Throw out your razor. Forget the location of your barber. Skip the shower every few days. Give up on doing laundry. And just get comfy in that one ill-fitting outfit and make sure you eat anything you want anytime you want. I'm not implying that the kind of people you date are superficial. I'm just assuming that they have standards and self-respect. Reminisce about past relationships. Fast forward through all the happy, sexy memories that first pop into your head. Take your time to replay all the fights, the one-sided discussions about your failures as a significant other, and the reminders of how poorly you stack up against previous lovers. Still want to go on a date? If so, rewind that second batch of memories. Become a political zealot or rediscover religion. Nothing will get you blackballed onto the no dating list faster than the rumor that all you ever talk about is politics or religion. If you're not going to just sit there and listen to your date talk about herself, the least you can do is avoid chatting her up about those two taboo topics. She gets enough of that when she goes home to visit her family. Check out your bank account. You can barely get by with what's in there right now, so how do you expect to keep a roof over your head if you're spending all that money on your dates? Invest in your future rather than blowing your paychecks on people who always expect you to pick up the check and buy them one of everything in the world. Maroon yourself on a desert island. As amazing as all of my previous tips have been, this last one is the only surefire way to avoid dating altogether. The urge to couple up, smooch a little, hold hands, and fall hopelessly in love is just too strong, modern philosophers. If you want to keep yourself from dating, you need to remove all the temptation. By marooning yourself on a desert island, you will finally set yourself free. You can't ask a coconut on a date. You might be able to flirt with a palm tree, but it's never going to agree to meet you for drinks. Cut yourself off from the dating pool and you will end the risk of drowning in it. Hopefully these tips will come in handy. Even though there is a comedic bent to any advice I dispense on this blog, I am serious when I tell you that it is okay to be single. Don't let society, your friends and family, or your own thoughts pressure you into settling for a relationship that doesn't make you happy. Love is out there, but it might not be exactly where you're looking for it right now. So grab a good book, see what's on Netflix, and make yourself that giant ice cream sundae you've been craving all day. There's nothing wrong with staying home alone tonight, modern philosophers. And now, it's what we do. From Story Shucker, a blog on WordPress. While out walking yesterday evening, I smelled sunscreen as someone passed by. In an instant, I was mentally back on the beach waiting for cousins to come down from the house so we could get in the water together. I was also reminded of something I once wrote about years of our family's summer traditions. It's a rustic waterfront cottage on the Chesapeake Bay in an isolated cluster of other old cottages a mile or so off the main road. It's been added on to over the last 50-plus years, and is filled with second-hand furniture, hand-me-down linens, and old pots and pans. To do anything, from use the kitchen stove to turning on the water pump, requires knowledge of idiosyncrasies so specific that they're passed down like family history. There's sand on the floor, the smell of salt water in the air, and to me it's perfect. The actual owner is my uncle, but we and the extended family like to call it ours. My grandfather and uncle purchased the overgrown waterfront lot in the late 1950s, and the family at the time helped clear the land and build the original cottage. My great-grandmother even spent time there, so starting with her and moving down the line to my own two children means five generations of family have enjoyed good times there. It became, and has remained for close to 60 years now, a fantastic escape for the entire extended Perkins family. As kids, we couldn't wait to swim in the gentle waves of the bay. Over the years, various combinations of extended family have stayed there together. By day, we swam, played on floats, and walked to the marina counting ospreys and bald eagles along the way. By night, we filled beds and arranged cots so that everyone had a place to sleep. Most nights as we slept in the crowded cottage, one cousin's sandy feet were in another cousin's sunburned face. But no one could have been happier. We were family, and we embraced the unity. It's what we always did. Old morning routines continued as adults cooked bacon and whispered over coffee so as to not wake us kids. I've often wondered just how many in our family, for decades, have watched the same sun rise over the same spot on the same horizon, while the same scene of boats pulling in crab pots played out just off the beach. Over time, Family who never knew their relatives who had passed away years earlier slept in the same rooms, same beds, and spent days on the same beach as those before them. We learned to appreciate the family history of that place. I hoped when I had kids they would appreciate that history and recognize this cottage as a place where most of the people in our huge extended family had gathered at some point. I hope they would get it. There was a satisfying comfort in growing up watching simple family patterns repeat as part of the experience at the bay. We'd stop at the same seafood shop for the same deviled crabs. A bushel of oysters or a dozen soft-shelled crabs for dinner was routine. Fishing from the beach and walks to the marina through tangled marsh grass and sun-beached driftwood were part of us. At the same time every day we'd come in out of the sun for lunch. After some time back on the beach, we'd all come in for supper. Our parents had done those things, and so had theirs. It's what we did. I really hope my kids would get it. Sitting in the shade of a pine near the beach, older family members spoke often of the fun they'd had there when they were our ages. Many of their conversations began with, "You're too young to remember, but," or, "back in the old days." Their spoken memories became part of our overall experience. And so did Rummy. Granddaddy loved to play Rummy. He didn't just enjoy it, he was a fiend. From an early age, we were required, it seemed, to learn to play Rummy, so that Granddaddy would have someone else to beat. He would play anywhere, anytime, but breezy evenings after a day of fishing and swimming were prime Rummy times at the bay. He played, my parents, aunts, and uncles played, and we cousins learned to play. Years later, as adults ourselves, my sisters and I started staying at the cottage together with our own kids. Decades-old scenarios were now played out by our children. They swam with their cousins, walked to the marina, slept on the same sandy cots we had used as kids, and they learned to play Rummy. I found myself saying, "You're too young to remember, but," or, "back in the old days." I wanted them to learn family things I had learned. We buy bait here because Granddaddy always did. We get groceries from that little store in town because we always have. Or after supper, we'll walk to the marina like we always do. Simple, familiar patterns became part of the good times there. It's just what we did. One evening after a day of swimming, my kids and I played Rummy. While we played, we talked about the number of dolphins we'd seen that day, who had found the biggest horseshoe crab, and other important bay things always discussed at the end of the day. I remembered as a kid having similar conversations with my parents as we played Rummy after a day in the sun. Simple time spent with family had come to mean so much, and I really did appreciate and honestly cherish them. But would my own kids feel the same? So many things we did while at the bay we did just because everyone in our family had done them for years before us. There was satisfaction in that. Simple, decades-old traditions help keep our long family history intact. Would my own kids feel that? We continued our Rummy game, and at one point my son shuffled the cards and said, "Funny, how even if we never play Rummy any other time, we always play down here at the bay. Why is that?" My daughter dealt the cards and said nonchalantly without looking up, "We're Perkins. It's what we do." "Yep," my son responded casually as he looked over his cards. "We're awesome." I never again wondered if they would understand and appreciate the simple but powerful patterns established over decades by a huge, close-knit family. They got it. Thanks so much for listening. If you like these stories or my podcast, please share and let me know. You'll find me on Twitter at Chris KK Aria, Pinterest, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Remember, it's Chris with a K. I'm always looking for fun stories to narrate, so if you're an author or writer with a story which fits the "Does This Happen to You?" theme, please contact me or comment on my Podbean page. You can hire me to narrate and produce your book into an audiobook ready for upload to Audible, too. Want to hear more stories? Please become my podcast patron. Just click the link on my Podbean page.